Mel Goodman is a professor of international security at the National War College and a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. From 1966 to 1986, he was a senior CIA Soviet analyst. And in 1991, he was one of three former CIA officials to testify before the Senate against the nomination of Robert Gates as director of Central Intelligence on the ground that he had slanted intelligence to suit policy. Mel Goodman.
Thank you very much. Two personal remarks first. One, I want to thank Congresswoman McKinney for what she is doing. This is an important examination of a 9/11 commission that was an historic opportunity that was missed in a 9/11 commission study that is terribly flawed. And I know that Congresswoman McKinney is perceived by many as to be contrarian. Well, I know how difficult it is to be a contrarian in the limited kinds of democracy we practice these days, and I hope one day her views will be considered conventional wisdom and not contrarian views. My other personal observation is I just left the government after 42 years of service, mainly with the CIA, but also the Department of Defense, the State Department, and the U.S. Army. That experience was important to me. I believe in public service, and I've always believed that institutions will prevail over the long run and truth will come out. And I think the 9/11 Commission has taught me that we need to be extremely rigorous and extremely tenacious in pursuing that truth because there's a corporate mentality in this country that's working against allowing the truth to surface, even in tragedies such as the 9/11 tragedy. This morning I'm going to talk about the flawed commission itself, and this afternoon I'm going to be talking about the flaws of the commission reforms, which for the most part are counterproductive and will ultimately do great harm to the intelligence community. But there is one piece of connecting tissue that I want to emphasize in my morning remarks and my afternoon remarks. And it's very simply this. The 9/11 tragedy, this terrible tragedy, was not due to oversight problems. It wasn't due to budgetary problems. It wasn't due to systemic or structural organizational problems. It wasn't due to organizational flaws. This is what the 9/11 Commission studied, and this is what they would have you believe. The 9/11 tragedy was due to personal failings. Institutions didn't make mistakes. People made mistakes. And the 9/11 Commission needed to observe the importance of accountability, and they didn't do this. And finally, and this is my real regret, the 9/11 tragedy was about bureaucratic cowardice at places such as the Pentagon and the Department of Defense, and this needed to be examined as well, and I hope eventually we can get into those areas. Now, let me say something about the commission. I want to talk about the commission itself, about the flawed process of the commission, and finally about the conflict of interest within the commission that is extremely important to understand the failure of the commission. Remember, there have only been three historic opportunities when we've had a chance to look at the intelligence community in this country. One was after Pearl Harbor. And that led to a series of investigations that not only provided very trenchant analysis of what went wrong, but provided an outline for the National Security Act of 1947, which really was the most far-reaching, important national security reform we've ever had in this country, because what the National Security Act of 47 did was to set up the national security community as we understand it today. The second opportunity was after a period of important CIA domestic abuses, and that was the Church Committee and the Pike Committee. The Church Committee and the Pike Committee came up with excellent reforms that unfortunately were observed in the breach. And if we had followed the wisdom, particularly of Senator Frank Church, the late Frank Church, we may have prevented the terrible tragedies that have taken place in the last 5 years in terms not only of 9/11, but using false intelligence to send Americans into war where they did not belong in Iraq. The third opportunity, unfortunately, was the 9/11 tragedy, which gave us this important opportunity to at least try to get the intelligence community, which spends over $40 billion a year, try to get this institution correct and to understand it and to see what reforms need to take place. And, of course, with the 9/11 Commission, this wasn't done at all. The 9/11 Commission had the broadest mandate of any commission in the history of the United States. With the exception of the Pearl Harbor Commission, there's probably been no more important national security commission. But in terms of broad mandate, the 9/11 Commission could have looked at any aspect of this tragedy, and it's regrettable that they didn't do that. Let me briefly look at the commission itself. What this country needed was an independent, nonpartisan commission. The commission wasn't nonpartisan. It was presented to us as bipartisan. Well, when you appoint a group of people, five Democrats and five Republicans, that is certainly not nonpartisan. And I would argue it isn't even bipartisan. What it is balanced partisanship. And you can look at the commission's report time and time again to see where the Democrats on the commission check the views of the Republicans and the Republicans on the commission check the views of the Democrats. So forget this notion that this was somehow a bipartisan commission. It wasn't. It was balanced partisanship, and it did a great deal of harm to the final product. Also, if you look at the makeup of the commission, here you have an insufficiency in the kinds of people who were picked to be on the commission. And I'm not going to look at the commission members one by one, but the fact of the matter is this is a group of people without any intelligence experience at all. This is not a group of people. Not one individual on this commission had ever received a president's daily briefing report, had never been involved as a consumer of intelligence, had very little understanding. And that was particularly true for one of the chairmen, the governor from New Jersey, who admitted he had no understanding of the intelligence community whatsoever. So there was insufficient stature, there was insufficient experience, there were insufficient knowledge of intelligence when this was totally relevant to what needed to be done. It would have been very easy to get a blue ribbon commission. You know, where were people such as Sam Nunn, William Perry, George Shultz, General Brent Scowcroft, Bill Bradley, David Boren, Gary Hart, even Warren Rudman, people who had served on the intelligence committees, who had studied the problem of intelligence and policy very closely and may have had a contribution to make on the importance of change within the intelligence community. Now, let me look briefly at the process itself. The lack of stature may have contributed directly to the lack of rigor and the lack of tenacity within the commission. The previous speaker spoke eloquently about the subpoena power that was unused, virtually unused, maybe totally unused. This was a commission that deferred at every step of the way to executive privilege. They had a mandate where they did not have to defer to executive privilege. Take the point of view about the president's daily briefs. The entire commission was not allowed to examine the president's daily brief. Only four commissions got a look at some of the president's daily briefs. So no commission member came away with an idea of what did the CIA actually inform the White House about the problems of terrorism in the spring and summer of 2001. The commission also had the very good idea and correct idea that they should do their own debriefings of detainees. Now, we didn't know then, but we certainly know now how the CIA and the military used torture to gain testimony from these captives. But George Tenet told the co-chairman of the 9/11 Commission that they could not have permission to debrief the detainees on their own, and the commissioners just faded away. They didn't pursue this matter. They didn't go to the mat with George Tenet on this one. And also the matter of allowing the president and the vice president to be debriefed together. This is obviously no way to run a commission. Now, in addition to the weakness in terms of rigor and tenacity, I think it's very important that the commission did not avail itself of the products that were out there, some completed, some nearing completion, some in important stages of the drafting process, that would have been very useful to their own work. And the obvious document that they needed to have, that they made no attempt to take full use of, was the CIA Accountability Report. Now, not a lot is known about the CIA Accountability Report on 9/11, but this is the only report out there that actually gets into naming names, into dealing with those people who perform miserably in the period prior to 9/11. Remember, accountability is what is really one of the key issues that's at stake here. Find out who was involved. Find out if these people were rewarded for their work instead of punished, and see what accountability issues can allow you to make systemic changes within the intelligence community. Now, the irony of all of this is that the CIA Accountability Report was requested by a joint Senate-House inquiry from 2002, which was signed by the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Porter Goss. Well, who is now sitting on the CIA Accountability Report that was completed exactly a year ago? actually in June 2004, none other than the director of Central Intelligence, who is now Porter Goss. But in addition to not looking at the CIA accountability report, the commission didn't take advantage of the excellent work being done by the Rob Silberman Commission on Weapons of Mass Destruction to show that there were no weapons of mass destruction, even though you had one of the co-chairmen, Governor Kaine, who believed the Bush administration rationale for why we had to go into Iraq because of the so-called links between Iraq and al-Qaeda and so-called large stocks of weapons of mass destruction. They didn't avail themselves of the important work done by particularly the Democrats in the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, the work done on the Office of Special Plans that was preparing false intelligence for the Bush administration that could have been refuted in terms of the evidence that wasn't there for so-called links between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. And finally, a very important work that was done on intelligence reform was done by General Brent Scowcroft that was completed before the 9/11 Commission even began its work, and this work wasn't used. Finally, since I'm virtually out of time, let me just say one thing about conflict of interest. There were too many cases within the Commission by Commission members and staff members, particularly the staff director, Philip Zelikow, where people had to recuse themselves because of their own conflicts. I'm not in a position to get into all of the various conflicts, but the fact of the matter is this was known before these people were even appointed. And this should have been grounds, just as Henry Kissinger eventually had to resign as chairman of the 9/11 Commission because of his own conflicts of interest. They shouldn't have gone ahead to name those people who couldn't even take part in the serious work of trying to understand what happened on 9/11 and how do you reform the intelligence community. But the most important individual to me, other than a commissioner, was the staff director, Philip Zelikow. And his conflicts of interest were so great that you do have to wonder why this individual was appointed to head this important staff of over 80 people. He had very strong ties to the George Herbert Walker Bush administration, very strong personal and political and policy ties to Condoleezza Rice. But more importantly, Philip Zelikow was running the case study program at Harvard, which took millions of dollars from the Central Intelligence Agency over a 10-year period to write case studies on the CIA to establish a record that was essentially untrue with the facts about the work of the CIA. And, of course, the classic case study that Philip Zelikow chaired, along with Ernest May, who was his patron at the Harvard Kennedy School, was the case on the Soviet Union, how the CIA got it right, you know, the politics of getting it right. And, of course, as we all know, one of the greatest disasters of politicization of intelligence that occurred even before the Iraq War was over the politicization of intelligence on the Soviet Union. And who did Philip Zelikow bring in to the staff structure as a team leader on his staff? None other than Douglas McCacken, who was serving a tour up at the Harvard Kennedy School. And who was Douglas McCacken? Douglas McCacken was the head of the Soviet analysis shop during the 1980s, who was responsible for most of the politicization of intelligence. So here you have Philip Zelikow from Harvard and the case study program, and Douglas McCacken as a team leader on Zelikow's staff, making serious decisions about the need for change within the intelligence community. My last word is what this study is all about and what this process is all about is how do you regain integrity within the intelligence community and how do you regain integrity with an investigative process such as the 9/11 Commission. And ultimately, that's not about changing structure. It's not about changing systems. It's not about changing organizations. It's about appointing people to important positions who have the nerve and the courage to tell truth to power. And that's what's missing from our government at this particular juncture.
Thank you, Mel Goodman. We're going to move now to our question and answer period. Again, we will ask for one question from, excuse me?
I was going to read what David McMichael said. I was going to read Sybil Edmonds' name.
No, we're going to do that. Mm-hmm. We got it under control, John. That's why I'm sitting on top.
We are going to entertain questions from our questioners, one question each. And we'd like for you to raise questions about the whistleblowers that have been ignored in the absence of David McMichael being a member of the panelists. And we would invite our panelists, John and Mel, to address that issue.